Turkey for me, turkey for you. It's the Sound of Hockey episode 262. We're calling this one the Jean-Sébastien Jaguerre episode. Why are we calling it that, John?
He had 262 wins in the NHL.
That was his career total?
That's right.
And how about that?
I do have a quick impromptu let's get quizzical.
It was okay. Against the Minnesota Wild in 2003.
No.
Oh, okay.
He played for five teams.
Mm-hmm.
Name them. Darren, you go first.
Anaheim Ducks.
I know the first one, the Hartford Whalers.
Yeah, bingo. Yeah. I thought that was a good deep cut. Yeah. All right, next one.
Do you know any other Curtis? Any others?
Wait a minute. Did you? I was obsessed with my Whalers take that I knew that I didn't even hear. Did you get?
No, he's.
Did you get one yet?
No, I got Anaheim.
Oh, okay, yeah. I do know. I think I know.
Is it
two...
a snake style?
No, I can't think of any. So I'm just curious.
Okay. I think he played for the Avalanche.
Is that he did.
Right? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. He finished That's his a good career memory. With the yeah. Avalanche.
That's what I was trying to think of. Like where did he play for? Ottawa?
No.
No.
Two other teams, though.
I don't know. I'm going to just be...
Toronto, maybe?
Toronto.
Oh.
Whoa. Look at that.
Big J.S. Jaguerre.
Closet.
Shame right now.
Closet Jaguerre fan, huh? One other one.
I don't.
And it was in between Hartford and...
Oh, so early in the career.
Anaheim.
Yeah. The Ducks.
That was on purpose.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. The Calgary Flames.
Calgary. I never would have guessed that. I mean, I would have guessed eventually because there's only 32 teams. Yeah, but
we only had like 12 left.
Yeah. Anyway, that was a fun impromptu. Let's get quizzical. I am a little ashamed at how poorly I knew J.S. Jaguerre's. But you know what it was? When he like burst onto the scene, he was like, was he all that good of a goalie before he emerged with the Ducks that one season?
Hard for me to remember.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I was a little too young also, and Minnesota didn't have a team up until 2000, right? And so, like, that was when I first really got to know him, was in that 2003 year.
I think most people, that's when they got to know him,
of course,
him, right?
Yeah. But they played against the Wild, and he was so dominant in that conference final series. And there was actually a game where him and Manny Fernandez went head-to-head, and they both, I think, had a shutout going into overtime, if I recall correctly. And he ended up with a 1-0 win. And I think that was game one. That was like how it started and it really set the tone for the whole series.
Look at that. The official, unofficial J.S. Jaguerre podcast right
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's not quite true, but we are an official, unofficial Seattle Kraken podcast. And it's been an interesting week for the Kraken. So we have lots to talk about here. We do have a review to start with. Oh, I should introduce us first, right? I'm Darren Brown, at Darren Fun Brown on the Twitter, joined as always by John Barr. Hello, John.
Hello, everybody. I'm NHL to Seattle. On the X.
And also joined by Curtis Izaki. Hello, Curtis.
Hello, everyone. Deep Sea Hockey on the X.
And be sure to follow us at @sound_hockey also for all your latest Seattle Kraken news and updates and alerts and all that stuff. There's, like
and
I said,
jokes.
Yep. Yeah. Plenty of jokes. We have a review to share. Did I mention that already? We're off to a weird start here. SOH Love from Bears Fullness, 5 stars. It says, I was a bit of a podcast hater before listening to Sound of Hockey, but now I need it for all my bus rides. I love when you go off the rails and love listening to old episodes from before I followed the Kraken. Sound of Hockey feels like a warm hug and is a great way for me to stay connected to the Kraken, especially when I am away at college on the East Coast. If I had one request, I miss when an episode-relevant song would play out the show. Thank you for my favorite podcast and stick taps to Andy always. On that last request there about the songs, yeah, for a long time we'd play songs that had some sort of subtle reference to something that happened or something that got mentioned in the episode. And back then I was editing all the episodes and I took a lot of pride in finding something that in some way related to something that we talked about. We started, the reason we stopped doing that is because we started getting some kind of no-grams from certain outlets saying that we couldn't do that. So we've stopped doing that. So that's why.
I know more than a couple of people that enjoyed the closing song.
I know.
Yeah. I know.
It's just about this. How, Darren, you could just take us out with a little jingle. You could
should
sing
I
it.
Sing?
You could sing us out. A singing outro.
We'll
workshop it.
All right. But we all have to work together here. If we're going to even try that tonight, we got to think about what song is applicable to the episode. so that I remember to sing that as the outro.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Happy Thanksgiving, though, everybody. We are recording this on Tuesday before the Thanksgiving holiday, and I, for one, am very excited about the Thanksgiving holiday. We have, as John has been calling it, a turkey sandwich of Kraken games coming up on Wednesday and Friday, which I think is fantastic. I think we're going to have a pretty cool atmosphere at Client Pledge Arena for these two home games as well, because they're both kind of like weekend. I mean, they are both weekend games effectively. Everyone's going to be all tuned up and full of turkey and ready to go. So, although turkey technically makes you sleepy, but
yeah.
So don't eat too much turkey before the game on Friday, because you're going to be needed, Kraken fans.
That's right.
Yeah.
Rematch with the Vancouver Canucks.
Before we talk about the Kraken, I want to give a couple of shout outs. First one to our editor, Sam. Speaking of editing, I don't edit the episodes anymore because I handed the reins on that over to Sam. Apparently about 2 years ago, he's been doing it. And time has flown by, and it was truly life-changing to bring him on. So thank you, Sam, for all the hard work that you do. I know that it's very much behind the scenes, and you don't get a ton of love from the listeners just because you're just kind of floating around in the background there just doing incredible work. So thank you so much.
We appreciate it.
We sure do. Yeah.
Make us sound a lot smarter than we are.
I appreciate it more than I can even explain. Also, a shout out to my nephew, Andy Brown, because he accomplished something pretty cool this last week. He made the varsity team for the Crete and Durham Hall Raiders, which is the high school that he goes to in Minnesota. And it's a big deal. He's a sophomore. I can tell you that when I was a sophomore, I certainly did not have a chance at even making the varsity team. And I never even made the varsity team. So it's a big deal in Minnesota to make that team, especially at that age. So really proud of you, kid. Keep working hard. And best of luck this season. I'm excited to see some games.
Keep doing brownie things.
That's right. Yeah. But it's pretty cool. His school is the one where Ryan McDonough played his high school hockey, and he actually gifted them a locker room. So they have like full on pro setups in the locker room
with
a stall. And I think they have like that system that sucks the moisture out, so it like doesn't smell as bad in there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Pretty cool stuff.
Nice.
Best of luck to Andy Brown and the Raiders. Also, we have our Patreon starting lineup, which I'm going to do my best impression of Chet Buchanan for this one. At left wing, Daryl W. At center, Pete L. At right wing, Matt G. At right defense, Josh. At left defense, Jacob C. And in goal, DJ G.
Very well done.
Thank you. Thank you to our Patreon members. We really appreciate the support. You can join the Patreon as well at patreon.com/soundofhockey. You'll get some extra content there. We do mailbag podcast episodes. Curtis does some cool video stuff. We get some extra, a little extra of everything on the Patreon. So check it out. We really appreciate the support. If anything, just show us that you appreciate the work that we do. And throw a few bucks our way. Why not? Let's talk about our little Vancouver trip here, Curtis, because this was a pretty good time. So Curtis and myself and my wife and your former neighbor,
mm-hmm.
all went together to Vancouver, and we had a pretty raucous time.
How was it?
It was great. It was so
like your first fan experience for a Kraken game.
Yeah. That's right. So if you listen to the 0.5 episode, I went to morning skate, talked to Everett and Al in the stands there, did the little interview, which I thought was super fun. But then after that, I was kind of done for the day. We met up at 4, had some pre-games, went to the game just as fans. I've never sat in the stands before for a Kraken game, so I kind of intentionally let loose, and mm-hmm. I don't know, mm-hmm. Curtis, you can say how I performed.
You get an elite grade.
Elite.
For your fan experience in this game. The number of high fives, I think I lost track when it hit three digits, mm-hmm. the number of high fives you gave out.
I was collecting them. Yeah. Yep.
And a lot of chants as well. It was a fun environment. A lot of Kraken fans went up for a Saturday night in Vancouver. So, and we, where Darren and I were sitting, we're on the Kraken Shoots Twice end. And that's where, you know, a number of the visiting fans will tend to congregate if they're able to get tickets. And so it was a pretty fun environment. And, you know, not least because Darren was there leading the charge. So it was a fun fun experience.
Yeah. I
heard you're a little bit of an instigator, if you will.
In a friendly way. I think I know my limits. I used to be an out-of-town fan a lot in New York, like every time Minnesota teams would come through. And like there, you really got to be careful. Like somebody's going to punch you, you know? And
yeah.
I did one time cause my friend to get punched on the subway after a... Yankee Twins
You should have
game.
Mentioned this before you started doing your Vancouver stuff.
This one, it was a little ridiculous, though. It ended with me saying, I don't know how you sleep at night in those Yankee pajama pants. And then this woman punched my friend in the face and got off the train at the next stop. So
cool.
Yeah. That didn't happen to us on this trip.
That
thankfully.
Did not. No, there was no punching, right. As far as I saw.
But I did, however... I did start a very loud Let's Go Kraken chant in the hallway on the way out of the arena, and that got a lot of boos from Canucks fans, which was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Curtis, you got to go back to Seattle.
I got to go back to Seattle.
Yeah, and you responded with, okay, sure, I will tomorrow, which I...
yeah, that's the plan.
Which was awesome.
The plan was tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. We genuinely enjoyed it. I think there's like a little bit of a rivalry, but it's pretty friendly. Like people are genuinely interested to know, like, oh, so do you actually live in Seattle? Like you guys drove up just for this game? And, you know, the guy sitting next to me was asking a lot of questions about, you know, how's the arena there and this and that. And the other thing that's cool about Vancouver is like everyone is so in touch with hockey outside of just the arena. Mm-hmm. So like all these people would see us like wearing our Kraken gear and they'd be like, oh, are you here for the game? Like what was the score? You know, like they actually kind of cared and wanted to talk to you. And I'm like, well, yeah, I had 8 beers. Thanks for asking.
No, it's, you know, yeah, they're very into their team, but very welcoming. It's if Kraken fans haven't had a chance to do it yet, the arena's right there in downtown. It's a short walk to a lot of areas with good restaurants and establishments that serve adult beverages, if that's your...
If that's your thing.
If not,
great
food and good, friendly people, passionate about their team and asked me kindly to go back to Seattle, which I have done.
Yeah. Like, not the best arena anymore. No, I think it's starting to show its age a little bit. They've done some things to upgrade it. Like the scoreboard is pretty nice. The sound system is pretty good. There's like some light shows and stuff that they do. I always love that in arena announcer. I think his voice just sounds like a radio recording or like a, not a radio. You know what I mean? He sounds like a recording.
Yeah.
He's cool. But yeah, I just generally love that trip. It's so easy to get up there. Can't recommend it enough. So.
It's a nice city too.
It's a nice city. And now that the games are going back and forth a little bit, the Kraken are finally beating the Canucks. You know, maybe a rivalry starts to form a little bit.
You never know. Go for a run in Stanley Park. You know, it's just great. It's wonderful. Okay, so like I said, it has been an interesting week. One of the games that the Kraken played this week was, in fact, that game in Vancouver. But in total, since we last recorded, they've played 4 games. One of those games was the great collapse in Edmonton when the Kraken had a 2-goal lead with under 7 minutes left, and Evander Kane just took him to town with 3 goals of his own. So that was 2 Edmonton games in a row where one player had scored 3 consecutive goals against the Kraken. This one was even more painful, though, than the one where Hyman scored the hat trick, because Kane scored all 3 of his with under 7 minutes left and the overtime winner. So at least the Kraken got a point out of it, but you knew that they came home from that one feeling not so good. They had a back-to-back, so the following night they play at home against the Islanders. And what happens, they get the win, but they also get the win in a shootout, which they haven't done. It was like the old woman from Titanic, right? Like, it's been 84 years. That kind of scenario.
And I broke out my retro jersey for that one.
That's right.
Yeah.
But then you wore it again against Calgary, right?
That's true. That's true. We're wearing it. Yeah. That's Calgary. So
you at least have points.
Right.
You have
3
all
points.
Reverse retro.
Yeah, yeah.
That's 2 games.
Yeah.
That's acceptable.
Yeah.
I'm going Bjorkstrand next game.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Regular jersey, not reverse retro.
Right.
Okay. We'll see how that goes. Please report back. So in between the Islanders game and the Flames game that you just referenced was the Vancouver game. I think after that Vancouver game, we were starting to get some really good feelings about the team, right? And what was really weird was like they played those back-to-backs with Edmonton and New York, and a bounce in any direction, and I wrote this in 3 takeaways after the Islanders win, a bounce in like any direction in both of those games, they could have had anywhere in the range of 0 to 4 points out of those two games. They came out of the two games with 3 points, and you're like, okay, this is good. We feel good about that.
Yeah.
And it's such a close margin to being,
but all of a sudden we're
feeling
good.
This team is horrible. You know, like, it's such a close margin. So, and meanwhile, I went into the Islanders room after that game, and I think they had lost 7 straight at that point, talking to Anders Lee, and he was like fuming, you know, and you're like, oof. I'm glad the Kraken don't feel like this right now. Yeah. Like, it just, it's interesting how thin that margin can be.
I kind of like that they got to play on a back to back and not like stew not, over
right.
that loss.
I thought that too. Yeah. I was like, hey, at least they get to go right back to it tomorrow. Yeah. And they played a team that was on a losing streak and was also on the second of back to back. So it wasn't like it was that big of a disadvantage.
And honestly,
for them.
As a fan, I get bummed when there's like days between after a loss.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I want to get that stink off me, right?
Yeah. So, I need a shower. I know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then the win in Vancouver is a fantastic win. We see some really great signs of this team starting to put it all together as a 60-minute effort, a holistic unit. They're all playing. They're all chipping in. They're all scoring from the top down, right? And it's very reminiscent of what we saw in games last season where, yes, they're getting production from their top guys. Eberle was huge that night. Beniers was huge that night. But then also Jamie Oleksiak gets a goal, right? They scored off of that rush that I talked about, I think, last week, where it was the one where they come in, they get the defense to back up, they go kind of tic-tac-toe back to Oleksiak. Oleksiak scores from the top of the slot.
And
so
that was a bomb.
And it was an absolute bomb.
Yeah,
just a
that was. That
bomb.
Was nice. Yeah. Yeah.
So that was great to see. And then, again, like, they played really well, at least through the second. Well, they played okay, not great in the first period, really well in the second period, took the lead, and then just kind of sat back in the third and let the eventual overtime loss come to them, unfortunately.
I somehow felt okay about...
I did too.
You know, the game, even after they lost, I'm you know, like...
It was a one-goal lead.
They were
lead.
In there, and, you know, one thing I noticed, and I was wondering if you guys picked up on this, so I felt like the Kraken were actually keeping the shots to the outside and take the 3-on-3 goal or the overtime goal out of it, but... All the goals were scored kind of from the outside. Not, I mean, I know Mangiapane like banged it in, but it was essentially off a shot
that hit him and dropped straight down.
Yeah,
yeah.
And to me, like, okay, well, Calgary wasn't great getting that great of chances, and there were some shaky goals in there.
Yeah,
on Grubauer to start, and so I felt like, you know, like they're actually doing a pretty good job. And I know there was a lot of people like, why are they didn't they play in the third or why didn't they push? And the reality is like a lot of teams. Kind of shut it down, and they were keeping the shots to the outside.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, yeah, it's not a good look, right? Because it's like stick to what's getting you wins and be aggressive, but at the same time, most teams kind of shut it down in the third and just kind of get all the oxygen out of the offense on the other team and just kind of shut it down that way. And so I'm not that worried about it. I don't know if you guys are.
I'm not. I wasn't particularly worried about that game either. And, you know, to your point there, John, I have two things, actually. One is, yeah, I think that's exactly why you often will hear Dave Hextall say after a game like that, right? He's talking about the third period. They gave up, what, 16 shots, I think, in that third period. And he's like, we didn't give up much, right? And to the untrained eye, you're like, well, you gave up kind of a lot because it's
right,
six.
Right.
But when you think about where those shots are coming, their whole goal there is keep everything to the outside. And they succeeded in doing it except for the one where it hits Mangiapane in front. Now, there's another way to look at that, which is when you sit back that much, I think you're kind of playing with fire and you're waiting, pun intended, and you're kind of waiting for something to happen there, you know, against you. And the only thing that can happen is that something doesn't happen. Like, the best case scenario, right, is that you don't. It's like being a goalie where it's like the best thing you can do is not fail.
Right.
Or you can fail.
Right, right.
You know? That's kind of how it is in that scenario. So if you aren't on your toes at all, I think that's you're waiting for a disaster. Now, it's funny that you brought that up, though, because I actually asked Dave Hextall this exact question today. I thought he had a pretty interesting remark. What I asked him was, is the goal to play exactly the same way in the third period when you get that lead? Do you want to keep attacking? And he did say, like, not quite. Like, people will say that, but that's not really accurate. You do have to play with more caution because you don't want to give up any kind of rushes or like dangerous opportunities. So you do play with more caution, but there needs to be a little bit more of a balance than what we saw.
Right.
So yes, there should be some attacking, there should be some pushing, but you know, you don't want to have end-to-end rushes and things like that. So they are intentionally being a little bit more cautious when they get the lead in the third period, but I think they took it to the extreme against Calgary. So
yeah, I mean, being positive, the four games since the last episode got points in all of them.
That's right.
I mean, it's, I think it's good to keep that in perspective. And as we're recording this, going into the Thanksgiving holiday, they are in the very last playoff position.
Yeah,
right?
And there's some voodoo accounting happening there to absolutely get them into that that position, which we'll talk about in a minute. But
so that's the positive side.
You're right.
But looking at it critically, which I think we should, because it's how does this team get from where it is in kind of a tenuous position more into that playoff position where we want them to be, is in three of the four games, the Edmonton game, the Vancouver game, and then the Calgary game, they had like kind of these slowdowns at the end of the game where they got too cautious. And I agree, they were keeping the shots to the outside for Calgary. But if you look at it, they dominated the third period, essentially, 100%. Because the Kraken were generating essentially nothing.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just, like you both were saying, it's just, I feel like they need to move a little bit more towards a neutral play
more
style.
Towards center, yeah.
Yeah,
I agree.
It's just, it was something that was coming into, you know, in previous weeks, it was an issue, and we saw it in three of the four games this week. And it's just a frustrating thing to see, especially when, in that Calgary second period, they were all over Calgary.
Dominating. And what I think really killed them, too, is that they took a one-goal lead, yes, but think about how many incredible chances they had after that and didn't score again. You know, they should have gotten two more and just put that thing to bed. It didn't happen. Calgary pushed in the third. They kind of acquiesced and accepted it. And, that's how it went. So,
and, you know, just big picture, I agree that over these last four games, the Kraken have done a really good job at even strength, keeping shots to the outside. I think the penalty kill continues to be an issue where they're giving up quality chances. I think it was 25% against. They gave up 3 in 12 opportunities, I think, over the four games, unless I'm mistaken, that could be wrong, which is not terrible, but it continues to be a weakness. Whereas I think this kind of third period lapse should be something that's solvable, or should be, you know, at least balance out long term in terms of maybe they get some better bounces on those distance shots. But the penalty kill continues to be an issue.
And just quickly on the PK, is to me it's losing faceoffs to start the penalty kill, and then all of a sudden, and because they have sustained pressure, and then it's the puck battles or the 50-50 pucks that they're just not able to clear it out. And that's, I don't know if the other teams are good at it or they're unlucky bounces or whatever, but I don't have data on that, and I wish I did. But it seems like there's more times than not, it's sustained pressure. Kraken, I think power play has been better, and so it feels like the Kraken are getting some decent pressure, but not like the opposing teams. And then that's the imbalance sometimes that I see.
Yeah.
And again, it's what I see, not necessarily what actually happens.
So going into the Vancouver game, Vancouver has a great power play.
Yikes.
But at even strength, the matchup is pretty even, or maybe tilts Seattle's way, even with all of Vancouver's success. So my key going into that game will be the same key this Friday. It's like, avoid losing the special teams battle to Vancouver and you're going to be in the game, right? Like, have it be a net zero, or if you're ahead in the special teams game, I think you got a really good chance of winning that game.
Yeah.
And they haven't done a great job of avoiding taking penalties, and when they've been on the kill, I mean, this is total mind's eye, but in my mind's eye, you know, they're not aggressive enough early enough on like kind of 50-50 chances. Like, because they adjusted their scheme from like that triangle and one type thing they were doing for the first year and a half of their existence, which is like kind of can be more aggressive to like the more kind of like box or diamond formation, which is meant to be more passive and keep things to the outside. But again, it just mind's eye, I think maybe a little bit more kind of like strong side aggressiveness might be something that they can try and work in to like kind of clear pucks earlier, like kind of force the play earlier and not kind of end up in a situation where they're hemmed in for a minute and then.
Yeah, but we're spending a lot of time on this, but even Vancouver, I didn't think they gave up that many shots on power plays. Like, I don't know if Quinn Hughes' goal was on a power play.
Yeah, they gave up one.
But it wasn't the down low, you know, Pettersson, who looks automatic from down low if he has space. He never had a good shot. A good opportunity, and I thought that was pretty good at stifling kind of that power play.
Yeah, excuse me. Actually, Quinn Hughes's was at even strength. It wasn't a power play.
Yeah,
goal. Yeah. No, they didn't give up any in that game.
Yeah,
I thought they did look better.
But it's like, even if the opportunities just weren't there for Vancouver, yep. where usually Vancouver's power play is really good this year. And they make me nervous. It's like even Chicago makes me nervous, right? When last year, going back last yep. year when Kane was on the team, I think I've talked about it before. There's a few power plays mm-hmm. out there that make me nervous. And Vancouver's getting in that category. And they didn't look that strong when they got the opportunity on Sunday. Yep. Sunday, Saturday.
And just one last point on this, going back to this issue of the team fading at the end of the third period when they have a lead. One of the ways in which the team generates, I don't have data on precisely how much of their offense this generates. But
it's fine. Your mind's eye sees 2020.
My mind's eye is 2025, maybe.
Okay. Yeah. Wait, is that better than perfect?
No, that's worse. 2015 would be better.
2015, okay. Yeah,
in that range. They had a lot of success with this in the playoffs last year. The two-man forecheck, where they were kind of would have someone pressuring the puck directly and then someone in close support, like even at the goal line or behind the opponent's goal line, generates a ton of turnovers mm-hmm. for them and like instant offense. And in the third period, you really don't want to be doing that. I mean, or maybe the coaching point is don't be that aggressive on right. the forecheck. And that, I think, again, it's a totality of things, right? You're trying to avoid these odd man rushes. You know, you're being a little bit more conservative in your reads, and maybe you're not deploying that two-man forecheck in the same way. And your offense kind of dries up, except for maybe opportunistic kind of like counter strikes. And maybe this was, and Darren, you could maybe speak to this. It seemed like there was, at practice today, another kind of long discussion. And maybe this was one of the points being discussed.
Yeah, this time it was a hushed tone, so we couldn't unfortunately hear word for word what Dave Haxtell was saying to the team. But yeah, he did gather them around for quite a long time at the end of the skate and talk to them about who knows what exactly.
I mean, I gotta think the notion of playing a complete game yeah. came up.
Yep.
But okay, real quick, they have been playing relatively well, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Like not just yeah. the last week, but yep. like literally the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, they're close. They're yeah. And I yeah. think what's a tough thing right now, a tough pill for Kraken fans to swallow right now, is that they are really close. They're playing right. pretty well. And yeah. you're like, if just a couple more things would go their way in every game, they'd be on these incredible winning streaks right now. But instead, they're in the last wild card spot, yeah. right? And so they're at least making progress. Yeah, yeah. But yeah,
To put a little data to what you're saying, at 5-on-5, like normal gameplay situations, you look at the analytics, they're like eight, over the last four games, this last stretch of a week, they're like in the top 5-10 in like expected goal for percentage. Like they're playing really well. They're generating good shots. They're suppressing shots against. Like the hallmarks of a good team have been there for a couple weeks.
Like it's starting to get on my nerves when we just talk about 5-5. And not, yeah. not your... Yeah. You not specifically you, but like, why do we always like to talk about 5-on-5? Mm-hmm. You
know? I look at all when I go to naturalstattrick.com. I'm no analytics guy, but
I look at even power plays, which is not mm-hmm. always because there's yep. multiple even strengths because there could even be 4-on-4 or 3-on-3. But I'm like, well, that's you're still missing a component of the game, right? If you're just looking at 5-on-5, I know it's the biggest sample. Right. And it's the most equal. But I'm like, there's a lot of 5-on-5 talk. And I'm like, well, yeah, unfortunately, the game's not exclusively 5-on-5.
And that just gets us back to what we were talking about, though. If you then pan back to all situations, the Kraken start to look pretty poor because their penalty kill is just conceding yeah. shots.
Yeah.
All right. And that's why we look at 5-on-5. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it just allows you to isolate the different game situations.
That's what
right?
we say yeah. is confirmation bias.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I confirm that we are biased
yes.
in that scenario.
We all
so,
are.
One positive over the last week, I know we talked about it briefly, but Jordan Eberle seems to be cooking all of a sudden. He's got 6 points in these four games, including 2 goals. Both of them were not great goals, but goals are goals, right?
Yeah. Sometimes I think you need those
right,
greasy
and he went
ones.
How many games without getting a bounce to go yeah. his way? And all of
yeah,
a sudden he's
got him. We were talking about needing to get net front, and yeah. that's what he was doing.
There you go. Matty Beniers has 2. Wenberg has 2. And Jared McCann has 2 also. So really good to see that top line starting to cook again. On the other side of things, Philip Grubauer had a tough first period against Calgary, gave up 2 goals on 7 shots. And the second one was, a real stinker. It was like kind of into his chest and it somehow squeezed through his arm and went in the net. But then he left after the first period. So I was curious if this was just because of play, right? Like if I were the coach in this game, he didn't seem like he was tracking the puck all that well. So like I might have had a short hook. So that was my first reaction. Was like, maybe Hacksaw is just getting a short hook tonight and he's pulling him out of this game. But they didn't come down the tunnel right away and sit on the bench. So eventually he showed up after about like 3 or 4 minutes of the gameplay. So I was like, okay, maybe he's fine. But then Hacksaw did say after the game that it was because of an injury. He didn't practice on Tuesday. They had an e-bug in there. And then Chris Drieger got recalled from Coachella Valley. So sure enough, Philip Grubauer is in fact hurt. It's interesting because last year too, when he got hurt and Martin Jones came in, and I was so sure that that injury was going to be very short term. He got hurt in Colorado. I saw him walking around after the game. He seemed totally fine. And then he was out for like over a month. Like it was a long time that he was gone. So we'll see. I think right now Hackstall says he's day to day. I think the fact that he stayed on the bench is probably a good sign, you know, and like there's no obvious thing that happened. Somebody said he got a shot and like hunched over after that. Did you guys see that? I never saw it.
I was in the arena and right. I didn't catch that. I haven't gone back to look the replays.
Yeah, there was the play early when Pospisil kind of ran him over, and that was a goal that got negated because of goalie interference. But looking back at that, it didn't look super violent either. He kind of like tried to pull up and kind of took him out, but I don't know. So it's really hard to say where he got hurt, what the injury is. I honestly have no idea right now. But what I do know is he's not going to play against the San Jose Sharks on Wednesday. Chris Drieger is up with the team, which means it's Joey time. Let's see it from Joey DeCourt.
I heard a couple Joey chants.
Yep. Chris Drieger does have some good numbers so far in the AHL this season. He's a 6-4-0 record with a .915 save percentage and a 2.2 goals against average. So we mentioned also that the Kraken are technically in a quote-unquote playoff spot. That is important because if you're in a playoff spot at Thanksgiving, historically, you generally make the playoffs. So that's an important thing.
I think it's 85% of the teams that are in the playoff position. Who knows what that time frame that comes from, right? Like mm-hmm. when they were measuring it. But because everybody loves to talk about, the St. Louis Blues were last place.
Yeah, right.
In January, and then ended up winning the Stanley Cup.
Okay, so we don't need to talk about that.
Right,
we can move on from that topic.
Why?
Yeah, why? What was?
I just have a foggy memory. I don't want to talk about something that I don't feel knowledgeable
fair enough.
About.
Jaden Schwartz is on that team.
Yeah, he was. He was good.
Vince Dunn. Yeah,
he's on that team.
Jordan Binnington, your favorite goalie of all time.
Jordan Binnington is no one's favorite goalie.
I bet there's some Blues fans that like him.
I'd like to talk to them.
Anyway, being in a playoff spot now is good. Now, I mentioned that there's some voodoo accounting because the Kraken have played more games than pretty much any team, I think. They've played 20 games at this point. The teams that are chasing them have played 18 and like 17 maybe. So it's definitely a little bit of a cheating to say that they're in a playoff spot. But if they can beat San Jose on Wednesday, and they got to take care of business in this one, right? I'm a little scared to say that because it feels like one of those where it's like, oh, all they got to do is beat San Jose at home the night before Thanksgiving. It's going to be fine. What could possibly go wrong? It feels like one of those.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we're going to be feeling horrible on Thanksgiving Day. So
yes, you'll know the result by the time you hear this. But it's got to be 2 points.
Maybe not. We might get this one out in time.
Maybe not, but it's got to be 2 points.
Well, you want to lock these two in and then take the pressure off the Vancouver game, right?
Yeah.
Because if you lose the San Jose game, then you're like, ooh.
So just to spin the dial ahead a little bit, perhaps before we record next, they'll also be playing the Chicago Blackhawks. And the San Jose Sharks and Chicago Blackhawks have two like historically bad defenses. Like, so the Kraken should be need to put up some goals.
But Mackenzie Blackwood's played pretty well, so you never know.
Yeah.
They got to put up some goals. How have we waited this long to start talking about the Winter Classic jersey reveal that had the entire hockey world very perplexed over the last week? Let's talk about the jerseys themselves first, and then we'll talk about how they kind of got rolled out. So we're recording on Tuesday. The official reveal is coming Wednesday at morning skate, so it will be officially out, and then I think we're probably going to post this podcast slightly after that. So I think it's okay for us to fully talk about what the jerseys look like
now.
I sure
hope so.
Yeah. I think so. And we have seen at least images of them, and I really do like them. I think the details are very cool. The crest is like a felted thing. They're red crest on the like dark blue, teal, and a cream colored stripe is the shirt. And it is meant to look a lot like the Metropolitans jersey. It's a nod to the Metropolitans, if you will, but it's not quite the Metropolitans jersey just because it's the total Kraken motif, which is really cool.
Yeah, I like them. I had no brown pants.
No brown pants. Yeah,
which is always a plus. Yeah,
so they're doing blue pants, blue gloves, blue helmets, and the only kind of change there from their regular gear is that instead of having like the ice blue writing on the gloves and ice blue numbers on the helmet, those are replaced with red kind of trim. So
yeah, and the numbers are going to be red.
Going to be red, yeah.
The numbers look cool.
Numbers look really cool. Yeah. I was a little concerned that maybe they wouldn't like pop that well across a stripe because sometimes that can get lost, but I think it'll be pretty good. I think it looks sharp. So I'm very happy with what Seattle came up with here. I think it's easy to fumble these, and I don't think they fumbled it. I think they got it just right.
You're a tougher critic too, right? So you're usually
On the flip side, I hate Vegas's uniforms. I'm not a fan of those. Although, my initial reaction to like the leak image, I hated it. Seeing it like on an actual player, I think it looks a little
better. Middle finger, is that the one?
Those are very strange. Yeah, those are very, very strange. It's a big V with like some piping, and Erica pointed out that it looks like a middle finger on both sides, and it kind of does. Yeah, it does look like double middle fingers.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, on the Kraken ones, I like all the various aspects of it.
Here we go. Devil's advocate. Devil's advocate.
I like
hater in the house.
There we go.
Universally, I think the takes that I've seen are that the Kraken jerseys are good, and I think on balance, I don't have a problem with them. I like the elements of it. I really like the red crest and like the felt look. I think that's really cool. The numbers in red look really cool, and I don't even mind the striping in itself. I like together. I'm just not convinced. It's just the combination. I want to see it. I want to see more.
Neapolitan ice cream, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be chocolate, strawberry.
Well, I'm aware. Thanks. Yeah. But it kind of looks like ice cream.
I don't know. I mean, then you could make that argument about every
striped.
Maybe because added. Well, no, I was gonna say every Kraken uniform, but maybe because they've added the cream colored stripe. Because the cream color is not really a Kraken color, right? Like that's something that they've added for these uniforms.
I don't know.
I don't mind it.
I'm just saying. Neapolitan ice cream.
Okay. So, yeah. Nice. If I were gonna give it, all right, let's rate them on a scale of 2 to 9. I would give it
not 1 to 9.
I'd give it an 8. I'd give it an 8. I personally really like it. Like I saw it and I was like, I'm really confused by this rollout, but I love the jerseys.
I like them after really cool. We saw like the more detailed images around the felt like lettering and
what is the scale? 2 to 9?
Yeah.
Two to nine. Yeah. That's a tough one, right? I think 8's a little high. That's all. I'd give it a 7.5, but because I have to choose, I'll go 7.
7, okay.
I'll give it a rock solid 5. But I agree I did like it more when I got the more detailed look. Yeah. So I'm leaving open the possibility that actually getting to see them in person, it might bump it up to like a 5.5.
Yeah. So the way that they rolled these out, I am under the impression that this isn't how the Kraken wanted it to happen, that the Utah Jazz wore them in their walk-in pictures on a random Friday night. I don't think that's how they wanted it to happen. It sounded to me like it was more of a NHL and Adidas-led thing. I don't know if it went, like, even with that rollout plan where they were like, all right, we're going to put it on different, like, influencers and stuff and different athletes that will kind of create some interest outside of just the immediate hockey realm. I still don't think that it went exactly the way that it was supposed to. And I don't know what went like right and wrong, but I think if like people were confused about the messaging there, I think there's a reason that people are confused. So it was very strange just like randomly seeing a Utah Jazz player wearing the Kraken jersey on a Friday night with no indication that it was coming or anything. It was very strange.
It was strange, but I mean, seemed to get a lot of attention out of like a normal reveal. Like,
people were talking about the reveal itself, though, as opposed to the uniforms.
Yeah, but broadly, right? And beyond the Seattle media market.
Yeah.
And I thought it got quite a bit of attention. So my only point is like, maybe it did serve its purpose.
Okay.
Maybe those people know what they're doing. I agree. It was a little weird and it almost seemed fake when I first saw it. And then turns out it wasn't, but why do you select Utah to wear these when that is actually a Vegas TV market?
Yeah. Well, and then I saw these like conspiracy theories out there that were like, oh, well, because they're trying to drum up interest for hockey in Utah or in Salt Lake City.
That's a dumb take.
Yeah, I don't think that's what was going on at all. I think it's just,
I don't know. Oh, yeah, that's going to get more interest in hockey, like these reveals for a random team.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, that's kind of beside the point. I'm hopeful we never have to talk about this jersey reveal again, but I am quite pleased with the product myself. Vegas, like I said, I think their full kit looks a little better. They actually toned down the gold color, so it's not quite as bright as their usual gold color. And I think as a full package, it looks pretty good. I still am not sold on that logo, but other than that, I think it's okay. I'm okay with it. More okay than I thought it was going to be. And nobody wore brown pants, so I'm very thankful for that. So yeah, so Winter Classic jerseys are officially out now. And you can go look for them and apparently buy them if you want to. We wanted to talk some prospects, so we're heading down on the farm. Moo! John, what's the word on Carson Rakoff, friend of the pod?
He's pretty good at hockey, huh?
Apparently.
Yeah.
Who knew?
He's had 11 points in his last three games.
Gosh.
Yeah, including six goals.
I knew he had. So he had, what, 5 points tonight Tuesday?
Yeah.
I didn't know it was that kind of 11 points in three games, you said?
Yeah.
That's obscene.
Yeah. It's funny. Like on Monday, in my Monday musings, I have like the player stats or player performances. And like it's either Furkus or Rakoff every single week because like they literally have been lighting it up. And Furkus is another one. He's got 8 points in his last three games.
Yeah.
So both players are leading their equivalent leagues, the OHL and the WHL, in points and goal scoring now. And another pretty cool performance over the weekend was Yanni Newman had 3 goals and a hat trick.
And he's the second leading goal scorer in the Liga.
Yeah.
Finnish Liga.
Yeah.
Which I learned in Monday Musings.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, that's an adult pro league.
Yeah.
He's 19 years old.
And he's still got the red, obviously, he's still got the Red Bull helmet.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Yeah. And and our boy Oscar Fisker-Mogard had a 2-goal game in the Swedish Elite League. Like, pretty cool performance out of him. Now, maybe this is normal where the top kind of prospects start to perform at these leagues, but this feels really good.
It feels like they've made some good picks. Now, yeah, to your point, not everything translates to the NHL, right? Like, I'm still not totally sold that Jagr Furkus, like, just when he came in for preseason this year, I thought he looked pretty small. Like, he just didn't look like an NHL player or close to an NHL player to me just yet. But then he goes back to junior, he's just torching it, right? So it's like, if he can get a little bit of size on his frame and like get a little bit faster, a little bit stronger, like he's gonna have a chance. So so my point is, it doesn't always translate that they light up the junior leagues and then come and they also light up the NHL one day, but it's always a positive sign.
And
I'm not
trying to make a parallel to him and Connor Bedard, but like Connor Bedard looks small, right?
Right.
And Jack Hughes looked small. And Quinn Hughes, when he broke into the NHL, he looked small.
But you put Connor Bedard next to NHL players, and he's still making NHL players look silly. Yes. So, like,
and I don't want to put that pressure on Furkus, but
of course.
Size is it's a matter of time and see if they can fill out. Right. So
to your point about it feels like this is normal for, I don't think it's that normal for like all of your prospects, well, not all their prospects, but so many of their prospects to be like the leader in their league. I think that's pretty rare.
Yeah,
I think
Rakoff is a pretty unique because he's the most recent draft.
Yeah. He's only 18,
Furkus
right?
Is two years ago. Yeah. So, you know, in a way, like, Rakoff's the one that's.
And by the way, Ty Nelson has now set like franchise records for the North Bay Battalion for all categories by a defenseman. Like, So I mean, it's cool. It really
and he's
is
technically
cool.
Got another year of eligibility.
I mean, I don't remember ever having a scenario like that when like my years of really closely watching the Wild where it was like, oh man, they got the leading scorer in like every like you just never heard that. Like maybe they'd have one year that would like, you know, pop up and then they wouldn't make it to the NHL. People would be really excited about him and they'd just fizzle out in the AHL. So.
Yeah. So after Tuesday night, Carson Rakoff and Jagr Furkus are 1-2 in total points in the CHL. Like that is, I don't know how frequent something like that, two prospects affiliated with the same organization are 1-2 in the CHL in scoring. Seems like it probably doesn't happen that often.
You also have 20-year-old players there, right? Like there are guys that are good junior players that go back for their 20-year-old season and are supposed to be, you know,
I'll bet McDavid and Dylan Strome might have been the rare exception when they were playing on the same team, same line, right? Because they both were scoring so much.
Absolutely. But like to go back to like the point of like, what does this mean? What does scoring mean? I've actually gotten this from several friends and fans out there. Like, what can we really expect? What's like a trajectory for a prospect like this? And I'm putting together something that I think might be a little interesting on that on soundofhockey.com.
Stay tuned.
What, you know, prospects that score at this level, what does that look like? I'm digging back through, you know, the last 5 or 6 years. What can you, like, what are the outcomes there? Yeah. So,
and you pointed out something today from The Athletic. You want to go into that?
So, yes. And, but one concrete thing is Jagr Furkus is starting to get some buzz for the Canadian World Juniors team. Both the two hockey prospect writers for The Athletic both put Jagr Furkus on the team, which we just a couple of weeks talked about and been a little dubious about.
He is technically a long shot to make the team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, but if you're 1-2, you know, if you're a top scorer in the CHL, you start to get buzz for the team, right? And that extends to 18-year-old Carson Rakoff as well. One of the writers had Carson Rakoff on the team. Now, his explanation for that is that Team Canada in general is like a little on the smaller end among the forwards, at least. And Carson Rakoff brings a little bit more size potentially to the lineup.
And sometimes they because technically, Rakoff is a younger aged player compared to Furkus. And sometimes they bring players in a year before so that they get 2 years of experience. So, and I think even one of them had Ty Nelson as like a potential scratch or an extra for the team. So this was not supposed to happen, right? This is they're punching above their weight right now.
Furkus and Rakoff
better than their expectations. So I'd love to see it, man. And it's not that far away, right? We're like about a month away weeks away from camp.
And on, you know, Team Finland, I think it's been pretty widely expected at this point that you'll see Niklas Kokko in goal. You'll see Jani Nieminen on the first line.
Those are pretty much locks.
Those are pretty much locked in. Yeah. Probably see Edward Schala for Czechia on a top line too.
Yeah.
Yes, lots of exciting stuff happening for the Kraken prospect pool. A lot of good signs there. A bad sign in our next segment, which is Bad Boys. You want to maybe take this one, Curtis, our resident Boston Bruins guy?
So Milan...
Not that it's a laughing matter.
No, not at all. No. There was a report of a domestic incident involving Milan Lucic, who's a forward for the Boston Bruins. He's been taking an indefinite leave of absence from the team. It sounds like kind of an indefinite informal team suspension while they kind of evaluate what has happened and what they should do. I believe Lucic has either been arraigned already.
Footage of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. So he's been arraigned on charges. Doesn't seem like a good situation. In his previous stint with the Bruins way back when, there was another somewhat similar incident, and I don't know if there have been any since that time involving Lucic. So it's kind of, you know, potentially not a first time or isolated incident. So not a good situation. Definite bad boys.
Yeah, not good and very scary too. You never want to hear anything like that from anyone, but you know, these players that we revere and pay so much attention to, you never imagine that they can do something like that off the ice. So obviously it's all alleged at this point, but yeah, not a good situation for anybody. We now move on to our weekly one-timers. Our first weekly one-timer. A slight change to the uniform codes for NHL teams out there. I think was a part of the general manager's meetings a couple weeks ago, where just under the radar, they decided that teams can now wear a different colored helmet from their uniform. So like they always, if they were wearing white jerseys, they'd always wear white helmets. Now teams are allowed to wear a different color helmets, like the Maple Leafs with their white jerseys while they're playing in one of these Sweden games wore blue helmets, which I thought looked pretty cool. I thought it looked nice. It was a nice contrast.
How'd that work with
the Hurricanes? I have no idea why the Hurricanes have been wearing red helmets for a while with their white jerseys.
I was actually going to say how the Kings have the silver.
Okay.
And the Golden Knights have the golden domes, the shiny.
But don't they wear those at home?
Not exclusively.
Oh, you're right.
Oh, interesting. Yeah,
maybe they get special clearance or something.
Or maybe it's technically still somewhat the same color.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Like they're like, no, nobody would be stupid enough to wear silver helmets, so you're fine to wear those.
Yeah. My
go ahead. Yeah. Joke's on you.
My only takeaway from this from a Kraken perspective is the white road jerseys that the Kraken have with the white helmets, I think is such a clean, good look that mm-hmm. I, you know, if they change it up once in a while, it's not the end of the world.
And
but
it's a dark blue, like it would be yeah. fine because it matches the pants. It'd be fine.
I think it'd be fine, but you know, it just in Vancouver just stood out to me again. It's like,
yeah, it's a good look.
Good looking set.
It's a really good look. Yeah. It is. Yeah. Interesting little shift though. I kind of like it. Just gives another look for people. Our next weekly one timer. Patrick Laine was a healthy scratch for the Blue Jackets, who have now lost 9 in a row. So things aren't going well under Pascal Vincent, their new coach, who was brought in to replace Mike Babcock after the great Babcock incident of 2023.
His long tenure with the yeah. Columbus Blue Jackets.
So here's the quote from Patrick Laine. He says, "It's probably over my career the most embarrassing thing that's happened to me, so I'm obviously not happy about that. They know that. It is what it is. It's done, and now we're back, so just trying to focus on playing. I mean, I'm not going to start analyzing it that much because I don't know what I'm going to say. I'll just keep it at that. I'm not going to say anything dumb. It's up to them. I just play here, and I play whenever they tell me." The response to that from Pascal Vincent was, "We didn't try to embarrass anyone. We will never try to do that. That's not who I am as a person anyway. We're trying to help our people, and we felt, take a step back, take a deep breath. We need you. You're important to our team." Which is a little bit of a different message than how Patrick Laine conveyed it. But I think, you know, players yeah, read things a certain way. And yeah, how about that, Patrick Laine?
Yeah, it's yeah. I mean, when you're losing 9 in a row, it's not just him. You know, Johnny Gaudreau is really struggling too. I guess he's just kind of, he's been a shell of himself this year at least. So it's not looking good for them.
Our next weekly one-timer.
Remember a time where we wanted them to sign, the Kraken to sign Gaudreau?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I queued you up there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Whoosh.
Thank you. That scratch, by the way, came against the Philadelphia Flyers, who are on a 5-game winning streak, the longest current winning streak in the NHL, and they are in, I believe, second place in the Metropolitan Division. So Philadelphia Flyers under none other than John Tortorella.
That's right. Who, at one time,
very recently,
Blue Jackets.
Yeah. Wow, a full circle little reference there.
There it is, yeah.
How do you like it? That is interesting, though. Philadelphia Flyers, they're frisky. They could be starting to put things together finally after a
they
really...
They weren't supposed to be.
It's a, right, after a really long, painful stretch for Flyers fans. They might be starting to be relevant again. We will close our show with tweets of the week. Mine, I have quite a few that I want to do, actually.
Good. You have the floor.
Yeah, you take the floor, Darren. Yeah. You got this one. We'll
you guys
clear
don't
out
have
for
any?
You.
No, we don't.
Mine was mostly just laughing at Gritty's stuff, his shenanigans.
Okay. Yeah.
When they're winning 5 games in a row, he gets up to some hijinks, that guy.
What's he been doing? I saw him throw a cake at somebody like Steve Aoki.
Yes, he was throwing cakes at people, and then he had he was doing a shootout on a kid goaltender.
Oh, yeah.
If you save it, you'll get my stick. If I score, I get to date your mom.
Right.
And he scored.
He scored. Yeah.
Of course. Because he's great.
Like,
and then he
skated it
right over to the kid's mom. Mm-hmm. It was by the glass.
Yeah. It was a little creepy, but it was funny.
I mean, it's
too.
Gritty's.
He's a little creepy, yeah.
Yeah.
Mine is, how about these Star Wars-themed Wookiee jerseys via the Iowa Wild? This is from Bleacher Report Open Ice, but just pretty cool images here of it's almost like a baby Chewbacca holding a hockey stick. And these were the actual jerseys that the Iowa Wild wore for a game. So I really liked that. It's not so much the content of the tweet other than the pictures I thought were pretty great. Also, I wanted to reference some very funny replies that we got to, we tweeted out from the game, just a couple of Twitter interns taking a night off to catch a hockey game. And there's a picture of Curtis and me. And in the background, there's a guy eating a hot dog that is like the largest hot dog I've ever seen in my life. And as I was scrolling through the pictures, deciding which one to post, I was like, oh, this one with the huge hot dog is pretty funny. I'm going to put this one up. And I'm really glad that people noticed it. So,
okay. So that was intentional.
It was very much intentional.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he showed it to me beforehand.
Yeah. Reg 801 says, look at the dude in the background. He's questioning how to approach the next bit. Aaron Peacock just like zoomed in and took a picture of the guy holding up the hot dog. Rob Cutmore said, Godspeed to my man behind you making a regretful life decision. And then Dropkick said, might want to offer the guy behind you a preemptive Tums, which made me laugh harder than any of them. So that was great. What was the other? Oh, I know. And then during the speech at practice day that we talked about earlier, we tweeted out long monologue from Dave Haxall to close out C-Crack and practice this morning. What was Dave talking about? Wrong answers only. We got some really, really funny replies. Scott Ledlin says, okay, well, candlesticks make a nice gift, and maybe you could find out where she's registered and maybe a place setting or maybe a silverware pattern.
Love it.
License to Will says, yeah. Okay, so Borgie is bringing the stuffing. Ebbs has the cranberry sauce. Canner has the green bean casserole. Yams, well, that's self-explanatory. And Turbo, you'd better have taken the turkey out of the freezer by now. The last thing we need is another bout of food poisoning. There's a screen grab of Dave Haxtell during one of his like post-game speeches where he was holding the like the cart from in the
stripper pole. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a stripper pole. It's the cart that they throw their jerseys into, but I understand why people viewing it might have thought that. But Tom Wiley says, okay, look, I know you've all seen the photo of me. I'd like to confirm that yes, I am stripping on the side. It's empowering. Oh, these were great. So thank you, everybody. There's a lot more of them, actually, but I really appreciated these participants. Those ones stuck out to me. This one's good, too. Hold on. Her sister was a witch, right? And what was her sister? A princess. The Wicked Witch of the East, bro. You're going to look at me, and you're going to tell me that I'm wrong. Am I wrong? She wore a crown, and she came down in a bubble, Doug. Grow up, bro. Grow up. Which is a very popular meme referencing the Wizard of Oz. Yeah. So. All right. Thank you very much to Bearsfulness for the great 5-star review. Thank you to all of our listeners. Thank you to all of our members over at Patreon, patreon.com/soundofhockey. If you'd like to join, subscribe on Spotify, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, subscribe on Pocket Casts. Leave your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read it next week's show. Stick taps to Andy. What's our song for outro? I was maybe thinking something Thanksgiving related, or maybe since we just did that Wicked Witch of the East thing, is there's no, because that's only like the Lollipop Guild, which I don't think I want to sing that. Do I?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you
I don't
do.
Know if I know all the words to that.
Do you have any Wicked songs?
Wicked songs are tough. I actually don't know if I know the words to too many Wicked songs. Mm. Look to the western sky. Makes me fly.
My new favorite feature.
This is great. Well, happy Thanksgiving to everyone out there. I'm thankful for this podcast, for you guys, and for all the community.
That's very nice, Curtis. Yeah. We're very thankful to have you as well. I'm thankful for Sam. I'm thankful for our Patreon members. I'm thankful for John and all the hard work you do, and Curtis, all the hard work that you do. Our listeners are incredible. You're all so supportive, and it's just wonderful to have you all here with us. So, yes, thank you.
I'm also thankful of you guys, but, like, I love seeing the listeners.
Turkey for you.
I'm thankful for the listeners that come up and say hi. Yes, that too. And Darren singing. I'm really thankful for Darren singing.
Talk to y'all soon. Doot-doot.
Oh my gosh.